Hello, extra time.
Very important to the league not to get a hoyt because it damages your reputation. It makes people, when they read it, just laugh at you.
The single club, they're playing in the League One, and they're playing in the Europa League, and they're credit.
Welcome to the ExtraTime.ie Sportscast. Declan Maron here. Just wanted to give you a quick heads up that going forward we're going to try and bring you two shows a week while we're all cooped up for the foreseeable future here. So from next week, our usual show should be out early in the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I realise you didn't get one this week, sorry about that. And then an additional show like you're about to hear. We did these kind of shows around Christmas as an Advent special. So go back and listen to the 25 timeless shows in 25 days if you've not heard them already. But that's the kind of gist of what we're going to be doing here. They will be a bit shorter than this as well going forward. But for now, enjoy our first of these Friday shows on Stephen Kenny at Shamrock Rovers, one of the few failures he's had in the League of Ireland.
Hello, extra time.
Extra time.
ExtraTime.ie.
A quieter season off the pitch, more talking about what's happened on the pitch.
Would say this is probably the one glaring sort of black spot on Stephen Kenny's League of Ireland CV. McDara, do you think, is there any ill will towards him at Rovers or sort of vice versa? Do you think going into this big job now, Stephen Kenny harbours any ill will towards Rovers?
It took maybe a little bit longer for the Rovers Twitter account to come out and do the congratulations for Stephen Kenny taking on the Ireland job, but they needed to compose a longer email because Jim Crawford was involved at Rovers and Damien Duff was involved at Rovers. So I don't think so. The general consensus is that Stephen Kenny's face was the wrong face at the wrong time for Rovers. And I think he learned an awful lot from his short time in Tala. And I think Shamrock Rovers and maybe the board and maybe the fans learned a little bit as well. What didn't help was Kenny went on to have unbelievable success at Dundalk. And, you know, their number of titles is nearing towards the Shamrock Rovers levels of titles. So, but I don't know. I don't think there's any bad will, between them. And Kenny's been back plenty of times, either managing Dundalk, managing the Ireland under-21 side. So, and I don't think there's anyone anywhere in Irish football who doesn't want to see Stephen Kenny do well in the job that he's going into now.
So, 2012, Michael O'Neill leaves after mostly a dispute around, I think, sort of finances. Stephen Kenny's looking pretty content in Derry at the time. McDara, I don't really remember this at all. Was he considered strong favourite for the job from the off? Was there a few other names floating around at the time?
Well, Michael O'Neill's last game with Shamrock Rovers was the home game in the Europa League group stages against Spurs, which was the 15th of December. And there'd been a lot of talk and a lot of rumours that Michael O'Neill was going to move on to that stage. There was a pretty poor relationship between O'Neill and the board at that point. Michael O'Neill only confirmed it on the eve of the game in Tala that he was leaving. And within 2 weeks, on the same day O'Neill was appointed as Northern Ireland manager, Stephen Kenny was appointed as Shamrock Rovers manager. So the board moved pretty quickly and paid a fee. Stephen Kenny was under contract at Derry, and I believe Rovers paid compensation to get him to come. And it was a big decision for Stephen Kenny.
We know anywhere near how much has that ever come out?
No, because that tends not to be released. So I don't know, but wouldn't happen very. It doesn't happen very often for players, and really doesn't happen very often for managers. So he certainly. Rovers moved pretty quickly. He had a great CV. He had managed in Dunfermline, and while it didn't end out pretty well for him, I think he got a lot out of it. It wasn't a disaster by any means. Like I think they got to one of the cup finals and took a heavy defeat, but you know, had been very successful at Derry across two spells. Had won a league title with Bowes. And he was from Tala. That was the other thing. Like, he went to the local school. When his school team played football, it was on the pitch, essentially right beside where the stadium is in Tala. So there was a bit of a view that it was somebody kind of coming home. So there weren't too many people going, Oh no, that's the wrong appointment. I think at other stages when there's been other appointments, maybe people have, there's been a bit of a camp for and against, but I don't think there was a case of back in December 2011 going into his first season and only season in Tala for 2012.
As you said, yeah, he takes it for a multitude of reasons, but notably it's a bit of a homecoming for him. And family life is probably a little bit easier that way as well. Was there a sense at that stage that there was maybe a slightly better football going to be played in Tala? Because obviously he didn't have maybe the same reputation he does now, for that even when he's gotten the Ireland job, we're talking about a sense of better football. But I know Michael O'Neill had a fair bit of criticism for that kind of thing. And as you said, it didn't really happen as much when results were going his way, but certainly he had disagreements with players in his time. Sure, wasn't there a kind of staff swap around that got everybody back on board? I can't remember the exact details of that.
Yeah, Trevor Crawley was Michael O'Neill's assistant manager right from the start, and he left in like June 2011, just before the European campaign, and Jim McGilton came in. There had been some discussion that maybe Jim McGilton might take over, but he went on and took on another job. So there wasn't much discussion about whether the brand of football would be different or not. People just wanted the success to continue. Rovers had won the league, won the Stanta Cup, and had qualified for the group stages of the Europa League in an incredible season the previous year before. And I seem to remember being at a game in Thessaloniki when Rovers were just on the verge of they were one win away from winning that 2011 league title, and fans singing about winning two in a row, three in a row, four in a row, five in a row. And every now and again it surfaces the bookmakers' odds, how many league titles Rovers might win. And that's what the view was at the time, that they were looking for a bit of continuity to continue that that success.
We'll get into individual players and maybe some problem positions for Shamrock Rovers throughout that season as they start to creep in later in this podcast. But I wanted to talk briefly about how crucial the late transfers were to his spell at the club here, because obviously you mentioned the Europa groups when they played Spurs. It ran on long, and it meant that maybe Rovers were late to the party signing players. And in your book, I mentioned at the start of the show, you talked to Stephen a little bit about this, and he references a few definite players he'd have wanted to bring in, a few nailed out. He was like, oh, we'd have definitely gone for this, we'd have definitely gone for that. Do you think he was essentially forced to keep a few players he didn't want at the club as well?
Well, there were some players that essentially the board re-signed. I think Billy Denny might have been one player. There were certainly a couple of players re-signed by the board ahead of the official unveiling of Stephen Kenny as manager. But he mentioned that Gerard Byme is definitely on his radar. But if you think of a lot of seasons, the season ends end of October, start of November, and there's a lot of activity at that stage when players are re-signed or let go, and other managers just did their business quickly. I think there's a couple of things. One was the players that he brought in. So those that he missed out, those that he brought in, and those that left. And I think really it was only when I look back and went, who were the players that had left at the end of 2011 that he lost? So he didn't re-sign either goalkeeper. So we had to fill that. We might talk about that later on. Pat Sullivan took a break and went travelling. Enda Stevens went to the UK, and Dan Murray went back to Cork. And I think only Craig Sivez was maybe of the back five, if you include the goalkeeper, that was left. So we had to bring a completely new defence in, not having a couple of players that he missed out on. And then he brought in one player that's regularly in the worst ever Rovers 11, which was Kerry Gilbert. But Conor Powell came in, Conor Hawkins came in, Graham Garland came in, but he wasn't the same player he was before he'd gone to Scotland. Daryl Kavanagh came in, Killian Brennan was another one. Seems most Rovers fans never forgave him for playing for Bohemians, and he never did well at Rovers, and he was never really given a chance by the fan base. Aaron Green was another. He didn't last too long at Rovers and has finally come back and is rejuvenated from his own maybe reputation from a Rovers point of view. It was the players that he lost, those that he missed out on signing. And then the ones that he signed, if you looked at that, like none of them really hung around or did much better when they left Rovers later on. There was also a number of players within the squad that he didn't run in, and one of them was Chris Turner. So Chris Turner had been some offensive remarks made towards Derry City player Eamon Zaid when Kenny was manager, and Turner got a ban for it. And Kenny was quite vocal in the press about it, unsurprisingly. I think he's probably, if that's, you know, that's what had happened, then you come out and you defend your player to the hilt. And it looked like he was proven right. But I think that didn't help him coming into that dressing room. Also, to a dressing room that had done something no League of Ireland club had ever done, and a lot of them had kind of been there and done that, and this new guy was coming in who was a different style to Michael O'Neill. Like, it's really interesting that you know, O'Neill is outgoing manager at Northern Ireland and Stephen Kenny is incoming manager at the Republic of Ireland, but they're very different individuals. Kenny being very soft-spoken, very kind of measured and mannered. No, he can bang the table as well when he needs to, but I think quite different from Michael O'Neill. And I think it was maybe quite a change for those that had played for Rovers in 2011 under O'Neill to what it was like under Kenny in 2012.
Yeah. I suppose some of the big problems come down the line, and you mentioned the goalkeeper thing. It's definitely something we're going to get into in a few minutes, but that I suppose can hold off until around the time Pat's trashed them in April. But let's talk about the opening couple of games first. I've gone through the archives, extratime.ie archives, and probably one of the few that have match reports on quite a lot of these games going back to the likes of 2012. Andrew, you would have been only a nipper around then, I'd imagine. You couldn't have been... I didn't see your name pop up here at all, so I can't imagine you were too involved at that stage.
No, I wasn't. I was only about 10 at that stage.
Well, we'll...
I was quite young back then. I was only in the cot then.
We've got your feature one coming up in next week, so look out for that. But it starts off with and there's a recurring thing here, McDara, I want to touch on, but it starts off with a 2-1 win against Drogheda. And reading back to the extra time match report, it's funny how much of this stuff comes up under Stephen Kenny. And I'm wondering if most of the time it just stuck to him, regardless of what his team played like. Not that I'm suggesting any inaccuracy in the match reports, but the methodical passing, something noted in that. Wide players mentioned quite a lot, particularly Billy Dennehy, causing a fair bit of trouble, even though they're suggesting the game was dull enough. And something that, as I said, recurs quite a few times this season. Oscar Janssen doesn't have the greatest of times by the looks of it. It's a cross that comes from about 30 plus yards, apparently, that misses everybody, including the goalkeeper. So Shamrock Rovers 1-0 down from the off, and Gary Twigg rescues it with two goals. Also notable, as you mentioned, Aaron Green, his first appearance in his first spell. But we look at the first few games like that. So you've got your win there. Following games, they come. I mean, that one and another, I can't remember who's after that, but they come from behind in the first two games to earn 3 points, and then they draw 1-1 with Cork with a last-minute Gary Twigg goal. I have seen, again, in these match reports, some unimaginative play suggested, and again, Gavin Kavanagh scores the goal for Cork, a 30-yard shot, and the bounce catches Janssen out. Rovers do well at that point to come back. They're a man down in that game against Cork. To get another late equaliser. Are you thinking at that point, though, that's what, a couple of games in, 3, 4, 5 games in maybe, are you thinking this is growing pains for Stephen's team and this is the stuff of champions coming from behind?
Well, the first 5 league games, Rovers won 4 and they drew 1, and you're going, that's fine, keep that going. And there weren't really any kind of early signs, any kind of worries. There were players just trying to bet in. You see that at every League of Ireland club. There'd been maybe more movement in players in and out than in previous seasons. But no, that it was really only the early April game in Inchicore when Rovers got hammered 5-1 by Pats. That was the real, God, that was, you know, a really exceptional scoreline. Pats played well that night, but Killian Brennan was deployed at left back. And Chris Forrester and Pats just destroyed Rovers. It's the famous goal everyone sees of Chris Forrester chipping, which I think there was an anniversary of it only, I think maybe 2 weeks ago, it was kind of doing the rounds.
How shocking was that? Was that a bit blindsiding? Because you mentioned the first 5 games. There was 2 Dublin Derby wins in there as well. And the one game we mentioned where Cork scored a very unlikely goal. So all that being said, Was that a bit of a blindsiding moment? There was no real suggestions that that was coming down the line.
No, like to get hammered by that scoreline, like Rovers, you know, having got to Tala, had suddenly become competitive up the top of the table compared to other previous seasons. You know, it's not that long ago, 6 years previously, they were playing in the first division. So, yeah, it was a pretty shocking scoreline on the night, to lose 5-1 when having started the season so well in terms of the results anyway. Yeah, it was a bit of a shock.
What happened that night? Because, I mean, apart from, as you said, it's remembered for Forrester's lob, but and really probably every other touch he had in that game, because he seemed to just have an absolute, he ran the show, man of the match, all that kind of stuff. But what happened? Was it just a case of a couple of early stunners like that in the first half and the heads went down? Because, again, it was 3-1 at half time. So there was still something to be played for. It wasn't like they took an early pasting and had nothing to claw back.
They went chasing the game, and that happened later on in the season in a derby against Bohemians, that they kind of went chasing the game. I think, it was still 3-1 up until 70th minute, and then Christy Fagan got scored there, and then he scored with about 4 minutes to go and to round it off at 5-1. But with that Chris Forrester goal going viral, going on Soccer AM, all that kind of jazz, it was... it was more that they went chasing the game, but like he took off Killian Brennan, but with only 6 minutes to go, and brought on Connor Powell, I think it was. So, but anyone looking at the game could see. But you know, Brennan had played a little bit at left back before, but he's not a left back. Anyone looking at that game that night could see that.
Which it's not something he's done all that much in the rest of his career, actually, Steve.
I think that might have been. In terms of. Putting someone in that type of position.
Yeah, converting someone to that, from what I can remember anyway. Like, nothing springs to mind. You wouldn't say, oh, it's a masterstroke where he's put blank in here when he's not at that kind of position, you know?
Maybe a lesson learned.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. That's what struck me when I was reading about that. But cut to around May then. So there's a pretty bad loss. There's a lot of skepticism for some of the results, some of the inability to break down. Our Gary Twigg is putting in a few. It's actually, we should mention that Dublin Derby goal a little bit before that against Bowes, before the pass game, where he is that lovely left touch, lovely touch onto his left foot, and he bends it around for the, I think that's the 2-0 game, if I'm not mistaken. It was a late on goal in that one. But let's cut on then a little bit to May. And I imagine at this point there's a little bit of trepidation around some of the results, but the one that stands out, it starts off with a fairly disappointing 2-2 draw to UCD, having been 2-0 up and conceded an equaliser in the 91st minute. And it was Martin Russell's UCD, so they tended to attack a bit. But that's where the boos seemed to start, or am I wrong in saying that?
There were a number of games where Rovers were winning and they lost that position. And talking to Stephen Kenny the season after that, looking back on the season, like I sat down with him for about an hour to talk about it. He was doing radio with RTE, and he's like, sure, we'll meet up. So I met up with him after down the Tower Terrace, subsequently been knocked down the building apartments there at the minute. And it was a really interesting hour talking to him about, you know, how the season went down, what went wrong, trying to get to the bottom of it. And but one of the things he pointed out was before and after that, he hadn't had a team where he managed where there were so many games where they had actually led and they couldn't close out the win. I think there was maybe five games where they led like that and dropped points. And UCD, to be 2-0 up against UCD and to lose that position was disappointing. And then following on, then they went down to Sligo. And you mentioned Oscar Janssen. So the goalkeeping situation was he signed three incredibly young players, but he had great difficulty trying to find a goalkeeper. So Oscar Janssen had been with Spurs and had got, you know, rave reviews. I think it was Tony Parker, maybe was this the scout over there. Had played in, not with Spurs, but had played in lower divisions on loan. And then the second goalkeeper was this South African who'd never played a professional game. He'd won a place on a Nike Academy in a competition kind of trial in South Africa. And the third one was Conor Wynn, who, has played with Galway subsequent as well. But these were three goalkeepers with no experience. And so Janssen had a number of errors. And so we dropped him going down to Sligo. you know, very good Sligo Rovers side at the time, bringing Oscar Janssen in, and it was a disaster. Rovers lost 3-0.
Which Rovers?
Which Rovers, exactly.
Because at this time, Sligo Rovers won the title, I felt, so it should have been Sligo Rovers beat Shamrock 3-0.
Well, Shamrock Rovers ended the game with 9 men, but that actually didn't really influence it. It was really late on. So Peter Say played that one game, and that was the only league game he ever played for Rovers. And, you know, we went back to South Africa and played a little bit. But it was that was a real crux point for the failure of Rovers that season, was the goalkeeping situation.
Not to take away, because I want to talk about that game more, but I'm going to bring in our, I suppose, what's the word for our sort of correspondent on all things players winning competitions and getting a career, because Andrew, I think you told me before when we did a show together on something that someone won in one of those skill school programs and got a contract, so maybe it's Scotland or something like that.
Was it the Inter Milan one? Was it?
Might have been. But
Craig Walsh.
Was it? Yeah. So there you go. I mean, it's not totally unheard of, but thinking about that for Riyad Peters, isn't it? Like, it's just so peculiar that he not only came in as, what was he, number two technically, McGarry?
He was number two, yeah.
Yeah, so it's the fact that he came in as number two, and not only that, you know, he's into this game, or as you said, it's realistically Sligo are looking pretty decent at this time, potential title rivals, you'd have thought. As you said, this is where it all really falls apart. Trina lost to title rivals down to 9 men. And is this just something that starts up after Alan Manus leaves every single time, McDarry?
Yeah, well, the joke is that, you know, Shamrock Rovers only solved their goalkeeping problem having let Alan Manus go, or Alan Manus moving on, sorry, I should say, by re-signing Alan Manus. Like, you know, and that's been, that the goalkeepers come in and come out. The thing is, Janssen came back into the team, and after that, actually had an excellent season, and he won the Young Player of the Year award at the club. So maybe he got the kick up the backside that he wanted. And Janssen subsequently went back to Sweden. He played with Orebo, got a cap with the national team, and had a decent enough career at the, you know, the lower levels, if you like, in Sweden. But if Alan Manus had been the goalkeeper, things would have been different.
And we should say, actually, that Peters was at fault for, I think, 2 of the goals in that. He wasn't at fault for David Cawley's dipping strike just outside the box, an absolute beaut. I think there's even like 3 or 4 players closing him down. So how he managed to get that away, it's an absolutely outstanding goal. But Peters blamed for certainly 2 of them. And I think, again, as you spoke to Stephen, at the end of the season that time, he pretty much admitted as much as well that it didn't work, the team selection. So it is a sort of another blotch on his copybook in that regard.
But you have to say the difficulty was for him to try and sign a goalkeeper at that time, coming in was difficult. I think all the decent goalkeepers were under contract. This Janssen came highly recommended and he went with him, but it just didn't work out.
It's a valuable lesson he seems to have learned since. And actually, one I would have thought he probably initially, we'll talk about Longford in the next week, but Stephen O'Brien was a good example of a player who maybe didn't have top experience, but was probably a reliable option coming in. But it seems like he, as you said, maybe it was down to lack of choices he differed here, but it's not something he's done a whole lot since. And it's something that our very own Tom O'Connor wrote a great piece on, I thought, where he picked through a load of stats of goalkeepers who he could potentially select in his Ireland team. And he does generally favour experienced hands, or has in more recent years.
Yeah, I thought that article that Tom did, it's up there on the site from last week, just went through all the goalkeepers that played for Stephen Kenny under his managerial career. And yeah, in most instances, there were more experienced goalkeepers. Now you can, you know, you look around the goalkeepers at the minute, Gary Rogers is the one that played under Stephen Kenny, you know, very experienced. You know, Talbot Oppose is on the other age spectrum from the likes of Alan Manus and Gary Rogers. But generally, yeah, it's been an experienced goalkeeper, and I think that was a mistake at Rovers that in 2012.
People will not like to hear Talbot if they've tuned in for the Shamrock Rovers story, and now they're hearing Talbot linked to the potential Ireland goalkeeper role. I'm going to put it out there.
Well,
I'm going to put it out there for now that
yeah, we saw some comments, but it was Stephen Kenny that mentioned Talbot on his call last week. So, yeah. And if you look at the in stats, you know, Rogers, Manus, Talbot. Pretty close to one another, and you know, in terms of clean sheets, I think Rogers and Dundalk had the most, just ahead of Shamrock Rovers, who had a club record for number of clean sheets, and Talbot was a little bit behind. But anyway, we're not talking about that.
To save myself abuse from a bunch of random Twitter accounts that just have Shamrock Rovers crests, I believe he'll stick with Darren Randolph, so don't worry.
Gareth Penrose isn't exactly Alexander Graham Bell, but the Dubliner did bring Irish football into the modern era with the establishment of extratime.ie.
Hello, Extra Time. Thanks for your support. You are the 12th man.
So in some ways, Penrose is a pioneer. The website has evolved to include radio opinion pieces, coverage of women's football, and a regular podcast.
Greg Bolger, as a player of some technical ability, but some is probably a bit disingenuous to yourself.
You're strong! You're strong! Thanks, guys. You're strong. Yeah.
Well, here's something back, Mr. Penrose. Thank you.
And I don't do it so they turn around and go, oh, thank you, David. Thank you for the laughs. I do it so one day someone will go, there goes David Brent. I must remember to thank him.
Let's skip towards probably the most disastrous result, and that's coming off the back of a few we've just talked about, the most disastrous result in Stephen Kenny's reign, an absolute annihilation at Daly Mount Park, probably has to be categorised as one of the worst towards the end of June. Defensive errors, red cards, no real conviction in the play. We'll go through a few of the goals. First one is it an Omen? I think it's Ken Omen with the error, which nearly, funnily enough, actually, watching it back, it nearly mirrors Boyle's in Russia in the Europa League for Dundalk, where it's the ball robbed by Dwayne Wilson, who swings the ball into McMahon, who just rifles home first time shot. So you can see elements of that trying to get them to play from the back, and it doesn't work out, and you look very, very, very stupid when it doesn't work. An abysmal kick out for the second goal from Oscar Janssen gives it to Keith Buckley, I think who it is, who, I mean, the defence is wide open when that ball comes out. There's a ball cut into the box and it beats two Rovers players and one Bowes player. And I think McMahon taps it home again. Third goal, I mean, it's a break from a Rovers attack. So it kind of feeds into what you were saying earlier, McDara. They're trying to push on. They're trying to get back in the game.
And that was 6 minutes from time.
Yeah, that's it. But it's essentially Rovers, who I can't remember who it is, the back for Rovers, but he dives in trying to get to the ball first. It essentially ricochets off the Bowes player who races down the other end of the pitch, sets up Moore for a tap-in. And another goal then by Moore, a nice little solo run, but I think it's Omen again here, actually. It might have been Gartland or Omen who comes out to close him down. And, he's static. He's stuck to the ground. He's like a statue. The shot that comes in then from Moore, I think, just squirms through Janssen's arms and goes in. So there's a few disastrous goals, self-inflicted errors there, and as you said, an attempt to salvage the situation only made it worse. And we've seen some of these mistakes happen, you know, as I mentioned, even with the Dundalk team and in higher profile games, ones you'd be sick that you've conceded. But it seems like the key errors and the problem here is that maybe the players at this stage just weren't buying into what Stephen Kenny wanted them to do.
Well, that game was a disaster. I think that's the phrase you used. Like, this wasn't the Bohemian side that, you know, won the league in 2009, one of the best sides played in League of Ireland. I think, you know, this was a Bow side that scored four goals against Shamrock Rovers in this game. They hadn't scored four goals at home all season to this point. It was the worst, heaviest Rovers defeat to Bows in 35 years. And a lot of people after that game were calling for Stephen Kenny's head. And it, like, these heavy defeats to Pats, to Sligo, to the Bows are all the ones that stick in the Shamrock Rovers head and fans' heads. And, you know, people say, you know, what went wrong? And it was, yeah, they went chasing the game 2-0 down with 6 minutes to go. Could they get a game back? But it was like comical stuff at the back. and he was nearly on borrowed time at that point. Like, the fact it was a Dublin derby made it even worse. But it was, you know, a Bohemian side that were nowhere up near the top of the table at all.
Given all we've said there about some of them heavy defeats, though, was there any point, I suppose we'd mentioned the couple of good wins early in the season, but was there any point even between those that it looked like Shamrock Rovers were getting motoring, or that they were buying into Stephen's sort of philosophy?
No, there was games later on. Like, maybe the next key point is the European game. I think that was what the focus was on. So, you know, Rovers fans had travelled to Kazan, had gone to White Hart Lane the previous year, had been in Copenhagen. And so the European draw was like, right, this is this, you know, we'll get back into Europe and go ahead. And got a favourable enough draw against Ekranė's Lithuanian side. And in the home leg, Rovers were excellent, played really well, hit the crossbar. Ekranė's were happy to defend deep, but Rovers played well and were just really unlucky not to win the game. But when they went away for the second game, what was interesting was, we're going to talk next week about Stephen Kenny's first run in Europe with Longford. And when he was drawn in that game, he was able to go and see the team, a Bulgarian team, do I have that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so this time around, but for whatever reason, he didn't go, and I don't know whether it was the club or a finance or what the situation was, so he didn't actually go and see them, and he wasn't happy with that. He would have preferred to do that.
Am I right in saying, given what you said there at that point, there's uncertainty about his job already?
Yeah, there is, and he was aware of that as well. Like, he was actually living in Donegal at the time, or his family was, and he was doing a bit of commuting up and down, and that wasn't ideal. He was looking to move his children down into school, and I think that would have been, that probably would have been in the round that Bo's defeat. There was also a family friend close to the family who died, and I think that was, from a personal point of view, I think that was a blow to him, and it's something that he's spoken about subsequent. I think maybe it was in Paul Kimmage had a long interview. I think it might have been. So, like, that probably, you know, that was maybe a signpost that, you know, his family didn't move down, that the club maybe weren't willing to fly him three ways to get out to, because it was in this place, Panevėžys, which was, you know, well away from the capital in Lithuania. Like, a lot of people flew to Latvia and then travelled in. But yeah, I think maybe that was a signpost, and they lost the away leg and it was a bit of a mess.
Just before we get to the away leg, because I wondered on this element of not sending him out there, as you said, it might have been a financial decision now, because clearly there was a disagreement with Michael O'Neill previously about spending finances for certain things. And if I remember, I know there was always a little bit of an issue with scouting, so it's not always as straightforward as just fly it out. But given the way Stephen's future was looking at that point at the club, is this just an element of him being undermined and them not willing to back him?
Yeah, potentially, because what was coming down the line was a lucrative enough tie against Anderlecht. And maybe the view was Rovers are good enough to get by that side, and they certainly were in the home leg, and heads just dropped in the away leg, and it was always a phrase I always use because it kind of semi rolled off the tongue, but it was, you know, embarrassing early exit in Europe against Ekranė's, and that's what it was. It was like, having gone from this joy of playing 12 European games from June right through to the 15th of December the previous year, with the thoughts of a trek to Anderlecht and playing, you know, a powerhouse of Belgian football and getting the Belgian beers in and whatnot, to go out to this crappy side where that evening in the bar we were in, a couple of their players came in. I seem to remember one of the Ekranė's players getting a wedgie that night, like, and they were laughing, going, they couldn't believe that they'd knocked out a team that had, taken a second half lead in White Hart Lane against Spurs, you know, not 9 months before. And then they went and played Anderlecht and got beaten 11-0 on aggregate. I think that summed it up.
And not only that, I mean, as you said, having gone and gotten a result at home that might favour just to get the away goal. I don't think they registered a shot on target until the last few minutes, wasn't it? Something to that effect.
Yeah, and it was a penalty. And Oscar Janssen played really well on the night. And I think a lot of people were surprised Stephen Kenny wasn't sacked that night. But what happened was the results actually picked up for a little while. They went down and they won in Cork the following, I think, Sunday. I think they played in Europe and went down. Like, Rovers hadn't won in Turner's Cross in a while, and they played really well, and it seemed maybe a corner had been turned, but then there was a couple more results where Rovers were in the lead, lost it, and then 12th of September, Bowes came to Tala. Yeah.
Well, I'll give you the stat that I think six games without defeat in the league, and I think nine including the cups after the Akranis situation. So, as you can see, that's why he's sort of staying in the job. I'm sure at any stage a defeat in there.
Yeah, they hadn't lost a league game at home all season, but there'd been too many draws, and had fallen well off. They were in fourth place and looking like maybe they weren't going to qualify for Europe. And that's, we all know how important European qualification is. If you think back then, we haven't had the cup winners have been from the top two, Shamrock Rovers, Dundalk and Cork in the last few seasons. And so Forth has been able to get size into Europe. Mm. And qualifying for Europe was just so, so important. I think everyone at Rovers, the appetite had been whetted for, oh, well, maybe we could compete with the big boys around Europe.
Which in hindsight, looking at that team, and as you said, where a lot of the players kind of went on after that, what was not really the case. Played a bit.
And I was subsequently been looking at the 2013-2014 team under Trevor Crawley, and that team should have done better. That was a better squad. That was a better team than the one Stephen Kenny was able to put together.
Yeah, yeah. So let's skip on then to Stephen's last game you mentioned there, September against Bowes. A 1-0 win at Tala just to seal the deal for Bowes. Free kick swung in for Janssen to deal with, actually. And he's come up a lot in this, and it's the highlights that we're finding like that some of the errors are in. But he's got his eye on an incoming player. He spills it and Devaney knocks it into an empty net. And the one that comes away with it is you get the image of Janssen blaming his defenders for not blocking, which, look, fair enough, but something like that, it just looks even an even worse error when you start shouting at your defenders for something like that. Footage, of course, courtesy of Bowes TV on YouTube there, if you go and find that. I noticed the chance, actually, at the end of that, of you're not fit to referee, which presumably there was some sort of uproar about decisions, although that was probably common enough anyway when the game went against you. But as you said, again, a pretty disappointing, pretty listless defeat. A sign in the crowd as well, 4-0 sign for the result early in the season, which I love. It's just lovely and petty to make a sign of a score from earlier in the year. Really top-notch stuff. But yeah, tell us then a little bit about how it unfolded after that, because, I mean, as you said, it's nearly like they've been waiting on the chance to get Stephen out, really, at that stage. And a perfect opportunity comes up after that. He didn't last much longer. A couple of hours, was it?
Yeah, I think he got the call that evening to come in and meet the board. And, you know, it was his first home league defeat. They were into the quarterfinal of the FAI Cup. His assistant manager would subsequently take that on. Stephen Glass against Shelburne, and Rovers would lose. And they wouldn't finish in Europe. The way it went. And, you know, Stephen Kenny was adamant that he would have been able to get the results to maybe get Rovers up to third place and guarantee Europe. But, you know, that defeat left them 13 points off top of the table. And, the criticism Stephen Kenny made at the time was, you know, there should be, you know, I think he used the phrase, having football people on the board. I think he was... You know, ultimately the board decided what way it is. But the structure of Rovers is different now. They talk about the football department, which, has Shane Robinson in the academy. You've your first team head coach, which is Stephen Bradley. And then you've your sporting director, you know, not on the board with Steve McPhail, but there's a, you know, there's probably a better setup, than there is now, or there was then. Like there's a CEO and there's a board, and yeah, he felt outgunned by he used the phrase that it was humiliating, and I'm sure it was. Like, this was a very, very successful manager who'd won league titles, who'd, you know, managed in Scotland, and had come to take over the league champions, and he didn't really last. I think it was effectively nine months. It was 12th of September, 13th of September that he got shown the door. And yeah, I'm sure it was very, very disappointing for him. And I think he did learn lessons from that. I think, as I said at the start, I think Rovers learned lessons from it as well. The way that the way the setup is different. I think he learned lessons about getting the right team around him, getting the right players. And like I talked to him, it was probably 2 weeks before the start of the season, and he'd gone to Dundalk, and he was talking about, you know, I think I'm getting a good squad together. And, you know, he'd taken over, I think I'm right in saying that Dundalk had one of the worst ever set of results in the league before then. Like they were really, really bad. I think they only missed out on, I should know this, but I think they only missed out on being in the relegation playoff because I think Monaghan were expunged. Do I have the time right for that?
I think so.
So, yeah. And I was going, in my own mind, I was going, God, that's a bit ambitious. But he was able to get into Dundalk and really galvanise the squad.
Which probably begs the question with this, then, is the blame, and I was going to say sort of, because this is looked back, and I even mentioned at the start of the show, the sort of blotch on his copy or the, you know, the one failure on his League of Ireland experience. But it maybe shouldn't really be as straightforward as that. It should be 50-50 blame attributed to him and a bunch of those players, or even, I suppose, 33.333 with him, the players, and the board who maybe either let him down in certain things he wanted, or maybe let him down in terms of, I mean, how often would people say now, had he been given a proper transfer window, that he...
Well, I think he didn't get a proper transfer window because of the nature of the timing of him taking over the club in Christmas week, as opposed to being the manager taking over in October, November. Like, so I think that's probably one of the cases. Like, the view outside of Rovers is, and I hear it all the time, I think people are nearly putting the boot into Rovers because Kenny has had such success later on, and now has become the international manager, the pinnacle of the managerial jobs in football in Ireland, is the Rovers didn't get enough time, that they should have given him more time, and he should have been able to clear out those players at the end of the season and bring a completely new squad in. But I don't think the patience was there for anyone from the fan base or from the board. And I think the fan base need to recognise that as well. Like the booing at the end of certain games, the vitriol towards Kenny after certain games. And, you know, Kenny was of the view if he was given more time, he would have turned it around. And that's what a lot of other people see. But, you know, and he was adamant he didn't lose the dressing room. You know, there'd been talk, but that came in pats, that he'd been locked out of the dressing room. And I talked to a couple of players, and to Kenny, wasn't true at all. But to my mind, it definitely looked like it was he'd lost the dressing room. Like, talking to a couple of players for the book, you know, they talked about, you know, the players were kind of talking about, well, what was Kenny's future at the club? And when that's the case, I think it's very hard for a team to go out and get results.
Although, as you point out, I mean, what is a lot of those players' future at the club? I would say there must have been a degree of ego from some of the players who had
completely lost
at European level the previous year. So, as I said, I think, as you said, there's got to be blame sort of proportioned up, and certainly Stephen was working out some kinks and learned a lot from this. But I do think, looking back, as you said, you analyse the players and a lot of went on, there's blame to be proportioned right throughout that experience. Give me a final answer then on this. Say a few years down the line, doesn't work out for Stephen in Ireland. You know, we're talking maybe he's got a one qualifier campaign. So it's 2 years, I think, is his contract. So maybe at this point, Stephen Bradley, he's moved on. He's had all the success he wants at Shamrock Rovers. There's a job there.
He's taken over the international team, is it?
Maybe. Stephen fancies another crack at the whip. Are you giving him another crack at Shamrock Rovers right now then?
I think I would. And I'm not speaking for the fan base, but would other Shamrock Rovers fans, I think we've outlined the reasons why it didn't work out. And those reasons wouldn't be around the club next time round, I would imagine. So
that's fair to say Stephen Kenny completely vindicated of blame then.
He was responsible for bringing the players in, and he didn't, you know, if he'd resolved the goalkeeping issue, if he hadn't chased games, if he couldn't massage the egos of some of the players that were around the dressing room at the time, things would have been different.
All that being said, now there is one area we can proportion blame directly and squarely at Stephen, as much as I'm trying to vindicate him here. And I'm surprised we didn't cover it until now. The team photo. Give us the lowdown on the very, very strange issue that I've never heard in any other walk of life in any sporting group.
Yeah, so for the 2012 squad photo, so the 2020 Shamrock Rovers squad photo has a nice new addition to it, which is the FAI Cup that sits down the bottom. And that's what you do for the squad photo. You put the trophies in from the previous season. But when Rovers had their squad photo with Stephen Kenny in it, the trophies were not there. So there was one, I think, with the players with the trophies. And Stephen Kenny's view was, well, he wasn't manager at the time. So he felt he didn't want the trophies there because he felt he couldn't claim credit for it. But it was noted at the time. And, you know, people talk about Stephen Kenny isn't Brian Clough, but you do allude to Clough's short time in charge at Leeds, and Kenny lasted much longer than Brian Clough did. It was 44 days, I think, maybe at Leeds. But Clough came into the training grounds on the first day and reputedly said to the players, "You can throw all your cups and medals that you won, immature pots and pans, because you won them all by cheating." So it wasn't quite like that, but that's how some people nearly interpreted it.
And we're lucky now that he's gone into the Ireland job that he is the exact opposite to work with. No medals at all or no trophies to be seen. So we won't have to be sitting in any sort of awkward photos with previous winnings.
Well, maybe he'll be so successful, we'll have a Euro 2020 or is it Euro 2021 trophy in front of the squad, yeah?
Will he be allowed to sit with that considering it's Martin O'Neill's playoff spot that he's used to get to springboard to that success?
And Mick McCarthy's team, is it?